Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. February's theme is all about love. Love will find a way is our main theme for the month of February. And today's show is all about attracting your soulmate. And to talk about this is my guest, America's Law of Attraction coach, Catherine Bien. Catherine has been playing golf for over 30 years and has been teaching golf professionally for the last 10 years. After finding her own true soulmate on the golf course, she is now empowering singles to attract loving relationships, teaching them how to use the law of attraction. And she is also the co-author of the Vibrant Women Wisdom, Surviving, Thriving Through Darkness and Bright Hours, and is also the featured teacher on teachersofattraction.com. And we'll be discussing her techniques on how to raise your personal magnetism to attract the romance and love of your life naturally. Good morning, Catherine. How are you doing this morning? And welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio.
Good morning, Johnny, and thank you so much. I really appreciate being here. Love the magic of attraction. You contacted me and invited me to be part of your Mama's Kitchen family, and I just couldn't be more thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's fantastic. I love to have you here, and I think we're going to have a wonderful time talking about the topics that we have at hand. But before we start talking about finding love and the law of attraction, let us begin talking about your personal life's journey. Please tell us about your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay, in 3.5 minutes. No.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, well, the first thing I wanted to talk about is just kind of starting at the end and going backwards. I have had a lot of different careers as an adult. I'm 58 years old right now, and my latest endeavor is really touching people with the magic of the law of attraction and helping them understand that it's their destiny and love is way more in their hands than they thought. And I just want to just address the golf connection, because I think that you were drawn into my work through the golf door. And interestingly, as a practitioner of the healing arts and really wanting to help people fall in love, I have been struggling for years with my private practice trying to reach the world, and it wasn't until I started getting some marketing mentoring that I found out about that just like a recipe, just like what you said about you know, a recipe for love, a recipe for cooking, once you know what to do, you can follow the steps and get where you want to go. And so my marketing mentors had me shine my focus and my attention into the law of attraction world and put the golf world on hold, even though I did meet my sweet Larry, who I love dearly, my new husband, on the golf course. And when I did that, Johnny, it was like magic. I put out what the law of attraction says, what you focus on expands. And so as I put my attention towards law of attraction, huge doors have opened for me. So while I still have high interest in golf, and I do coach some of my clients in their golf attraction, my attention has shifted over to the soulmate area at the moment. And so I just want to straighten out that little bit of confusion.
Sure.
But as I just did briefly, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm in California right now. I am the oldest of 8 children, 7 brothers. Even the dog was a boy, so I say I grew up with a lot of testosterone in the house, a total tomboy. But my family had a lot of turmoil. My parents were ill-equipped, the way so many of our parents were, to handle that kind of crowd. It was a Catholic family, and there are many big Catholic families in the 50s. But my parents did not have a very close relationship, and there was alcohol involved, and you know how that can just tear a family apart. So we, when I came old enough to escape at 17 and ran away to college, it was a real release for me, and I began to experiment in the world. But what had happened, I was so shy, and I had been impacted by all of the turmoil that I grew up with. I almost feel like I created a a persona for myself mm-hmm. that I walked into. I remember clearly making a decision to be more confident, to handle life differently in all the wisdom I have at 17.
Mm-hmm.
And went forward, enjoyed college, and married my college sweetheart. We were drawn together, very high chemistry, couldn't have missed him. He couldn't have missed me. We absolutely were drawn together, and ended up with two children, and now I have a grandchild, I'm happy to say. But our marriage was never really built on true, unconditional love. We both were kind of dancing with one another. As I look back now, these questions are good, you know. We had like a dance together where we were walking through life doing the stuff you do, being a mom, being a dad, going to work, doing our thing. But we really never interrelated during our marriage. We were very parallel in our walk. And we had a successful, from the outside looking in, marriage. But there wasn't the closeness that I experience now.
Mm-hmm.
So what I can say is going through those years, I was married 29 years, going through those years without an interrelatedness in my relationship.
That's a very long time, though, for 29 years.
It is a long time. Yeah. It is. But I was numb to what I was missing. I didn't really know what I was missing. I had, you know, I did not want to be divorced.
Right.
I was a religious person through many of those years, and it didn't fit with my belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept wiggling, and I was a chameleon. You know, I kept changing and trying to fit and trying to, you know, not make anybody mad, and how, you know, not. I was living such a small version of myself to try to make it work.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at it also because the fact that you guys do have children together too, because you know, you guys need to be a little bit more mindful sometimes, and that's what it's all about, because the need of the family outweighs the need of individuals in some ways.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
But having said that, you know, 25 years certainly is a very long time. And I mean, for that is, you know, that's a tremendous amount of accomplishments, you know, having the fact that you have grown from within. In all actuality, based on what you're telling me and what I've heard, is that you have grown over that, over those years, and so did your ex-husband. Perhaps not together in the same direction, but certainly from a personal standpoint of view, you guys have grown.
Absolutely. And I remember one time when we were in counseling, because we did try. I mean, we went to counseling. We did. Nobody cheated. I'm so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just, we came to the end of ourselves. And I remember my former husband said at one point, you have to let yourself be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he said that, it made me mad, because I was like, I'm right here. Love me. I'm trying. I can remember chasing him. Seriously. Chasing him around the house, well, not running, but walking, just begging him to listen to me, to know me. I mean, when I went to counseling and started to change some of what really wasn't working for me, he turned to me and he looked at me and he said, this isn't fair.
Yeah.
These are things that have been going on all these years. How can you be changing them now?
Right.
And you know what, Johnny? I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand what I needed as a woman when I was 21 years old, you know, and when I got to be in my 40s and the stuff wasn't working anymore and I wanted change. And what happened for some women, and their men do adjust, and they stay married through these big changes, but it didn't work out for me that way. And I was terribly sad for quite a while. In fact, it was about 2000. I remember I was on the couch. I was taking 3 antidepressant drugs and still couldn't motivate myself to get off the couch. I mean, I was just in such trouble, such a shadow of myself right now. And I remember one of the people I knew said, you know, once you get on that antidepressant medication, you'll have to be on that for life, because, you know, you'll never be able to balance yourself without it. Well, I'm happy to say that wasn't accurate. But at the time, you know, I really did not see a future. I mean, I did not want to be divorced. I was heartbroken.
But the good news is that you did, and you moved forward with it. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, too, because we grow every day. I mean, the basic core inside never changed. But I, myself, I can speak from my own personal experience, because one of the things that I was married at one time, long time ago, for about a year and a half, And it was wrong from the very beginning when I said that, in the sense that we were two different people, and we were quick to realize that and move on with our, you know, our own lives, so to speak. But
right.
The uniqueness was the fact that, and you're right, I could relate to the fact that, you know, going to counseling and seeing things and so forth. And one of the uniqueness was, and I'm speaking for myself here, that I was very successful at a very young age. So what I could relate to is the right hand and the left hand concept, where in business I was very good, I was very articulate, very professional. I'm like matured, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Versus in my personal life, on the other hand, that I was trusted into, you know, into a career rather quickly, simply because of economics and those kind of things, you know, family, you know, and so forth, you know, supporting family and whatnot. I mean, that is my, you know, my mom and everything else. So I really did not develop the personal side of the equation.
Right. Right.
And so having said that, then what happens is that, you know, I was told about boundaries and everything else. I find myself being introvert, not mentioning anything, things that weren't right, thinking that, well, if we get married, then things will work out. Of course,
right.
It doesn't.
Right.
And so having said that, but let's come back to the situation at hand. What is a love coach?
Well, as I, segueing from that, you know, and my husband had once told me that you have to let yourself be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a challenge to me because I desperately wanted to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found out as I went through the divorce and forward, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was not planning to meet Larry, I was having a ball being single.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I was 50 and single, and
mm-hmm.
my 22-year-old daughter was giving me dating advice, which was a riot, you know, bless her. But I hadn't been dating, you can only imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So what had happened was that when I was teaching golf, people would, women would burst into tears while I was teaching golf, and they would say, I'm getting divorced, and I don't know what to do. And one time I was at the airport, at O'Hare Airport, I was sitting at the bar watching something on TV. The lady next to me turned to me and said, my father died an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had dramatic people and signs from the divine that I need to be helping people with love, you know, so how ironic.
Yeah.
When I went through all of the counseling to detach myself from the energy that was my marriage, I just became passionate for people that don't see themselves as lovable.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many times, Johnny, have you given a compliment to somebody and they just deflect it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you try to be kind to someone and they deflect the kindness.
Right.
And that really fascinated me. So I began to, as I could see myself as a lovable being through all of my coaching and counseling that I've gotten over
mm-hmm.
the years and all the classes I've taken, I became just drawn and compelled to begin to help people. So what I do with my business basically is help people to see themselves
mm-hmm.
as lovable, knowing that there's nothing more attractive than a radiantly self-confident person.
Mm-hmm.
We like to hang out with happy people.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
basically the magic. And
yeah.
so the more you accept yourself and really enjoy your own company and get a kick out of yourself, you know, instead of kicking yourself in the butt for making mistakes all the time, you just
mm-hmm.
enjoy yourself, people are naturally drawn to your energy. And so what I do is that I help people create that image of themselves as a lovable person and then create a structure to project that into the world.
Very interesting. And in the course of doing that, do you, I mean, this is always the question, because we tend to be, whether it's a romantic gesture or romantic way of approaching things, being, you know, you have a certain ideology about life,
mm-hmm.
you know, is there such a thing as the one?
Oh, thank you for asking.
Oh,
that's one of my favorite questions. That one is, do you believe in soulmates? They're very polarizing questions, because
sure.
people have strong opinions. And so I would say that, no, absolutely not. There's not the one. Now, before you all hang up and go off the radio, don't go off the radio, because I want to explain what I mean by that.
Yeah.
What I have found with many my clients, the heart of my work is really reaching mostly women, Johnny, although mm-hmm. men are finding me too, who are in their 40s and 50s and either never married mm-hmm. or have been separated from dating for years and years. There was a lady the other day who I spoke to who hasn't had a date since 1994.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time to be single. And so I think that what happens is when people are isolated, they have perhaps they're isolated from their family of origin. That happens mm-hmm. quite frequently, especially now with geographically how far away we live from one another.
Mm-hmm.
They're detached. They don't really have good friends. They don't have good same-sex friends or opposite-sex friends. And they also are missing romance.
Mm-hmm.
So mistakenly, many people think that one human being can answer all those needs. And guess
yeah.
what? That cannot happen. So I say it takes a village. It takes a village to keep me happy. I mean, if my husband, if only he was my love conduit and the only love I could receive came from him, he couldn't do it and our relationship would wither and die. So when if you believe there's a one, yes, there is a companion for you to live with you and to, you know, have comfort. What I tell my clients is when I'm with Larry, I am so comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I am myself. I act like myself. I don't have to put on airs and pretend I'm someone else. And
mm-hmm.
he just gets a kick out of me. And we have wonderful rapport. And I love that. But I also receive love from lots of different other sources. And that helps me be a better lover for Lair.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting look at things. How about, let's talk about, you know, one of the things that people always have a problem with is fear, trust.
Yes, yes.
How do you approach that?
Well, that one is really, absolutely, I would say, at the bottom line of people who are really not able to draw love in. And what, you know, some people, I think there's almost like a jealousy, you know, like some people look over at somebody else. For example, let's say you walk in a restaurant and you look at a couple that are, you know, engaged with one another over dinner and you know it's a first date. Have you ever seen those, Johnny, where you can tell by the way they're holding hands and looking at each other. It's obvious
Definitely.
These people, it's a first date. And part of you can, your cynic can come up inside and you're like, oh yeah, wait till 6 months from now, we'll see how happy you are, you know.
It's very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so sometimes we look, and that's such a good sign right there, that if when you see a couple that are in love, how do you respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
Is there jealousy that comes up? Is there anger, fear, or do you rejoice with them? It's a great barometer for where your energy is and where your vibration is when it comes to love. It's almost like a self-assessment because anything short of joy, when I see a little gray-haired couple walking hand in hand, my heart just always is happy for them, and I always think that's what I want. I want that kind of love. But many of my clients are actually hurt by that. They'll look at that and they'll feel pain. Some of it is physical, like they'll feel their throat closing up, or they might feel their chest hurts in sadness. And Johnny, that is one of the, oh gosh, it's so heartbreaking for me, because in order to manifest a love, you have to let yourself want it more than anything.
Right.
You have to have desire. But most of the people that find me, when they get to a place of really wanting it, the pain of a past relationship stops that flow. And then they stop believing that love is really out there.
Right.
And so that's what makes it seem so hard. And trust and fear are, or excuse me, mistrust and fear are most often like anchors that are holding the person back from their greatest good when it comes to love.
I mean, you're reminded of it, though, unfortunately, because we're humans and we feel. I mean, sure, we look at someone, a couple, that's what we want. Or actually, in all actuality, we had that. And then the fact that, do I really want to let myself go? Do I want to be vulnerable again? And and you and I kind of shared the same thing here in terms of, I mean, of course, you know, you're talking about love in terms of couples, and I've talked about unconditional love from a mothering perspective, and which you, of course, as a mother, understands where I'm coming from. And that's total vulnerability, being just letting it go and like, wow, it can, you know, and it hurts. When it hurts, it really hurts.
Oh, it does. But not
when
only that,
celebration, there's big celebration, you know. So.
Oh, yes, and that part of love, that part, the fact that it does hurt part of the time. There's so many people, I'm not kidding, they're in their 40s and 50s, they have, and I tease them about this once they are part of my family, but it's almost like an adolescent is still living in, with them in their heart that is, you know, keeping score and not wanting to be hurt. And when you talk about being a mom, I have, my children are now 30 and 28, and my 30-year-old daughter needs me in ways that she didn't when she was three.
Right.
But the, I can feel real pain when I need to have a boundary for myself, where some behavior of hers, it's like you don't, it's like I don't need to know every detail of her life. In fact, it's probably a good thing that we adults don't know every detail of our adult children's life, because sometimes I'll need to tell her, is this something I need to know? Or can you find somebody else? Seriously, or can you find somebody else to vent to? Because when I hear her emotional upsets, it's hurts. So love, the fact that, oh, can I tell you one of the most amazing revelations I had in the last 2 years about love that really changed me? My own mom and I have had a really challenging relationship. And if she were listening to this call, and she might be because she listens in on some of my stuff, she would agree. We have had a challenging relationship. It's almost as if she doesn't get me. And I don't get her. And I think that's one of the things that's so critical in love. Can you love someone who doesn't get you? You know, that's hard because it's so much easier with the people that get you. You know, you want to wrap your arms around them and you want to keep them. But mom and I have had this difficulty. And it's been troubling. Like I said, I'm, you know, in my 50s now, and this has been going on for most of my life. So sometime in the last couple of years, and I do know it was because I'm a student of what it feels like to be loved, and I'm curious about how to maximize that as a human being. It's just I'm driven to it. And it occurred to me that when I was going through a lot of very deep work with one of my coaches, that when I was in deep sadness, I had certain physical feelings. I had a tingling behind my eyes where tears would form. My throat would start to close up. It was like that feeling before you cry, you know, and my chest would get very tight, and I could feel aching in my upper chest when I got very, very sad. And so I finally allowed that sadness to come, and I began to cry, and I began to accept that almost scary feeling of deep emotion. Well, Johnny, you'll never guess what happened after that. I began to realize that when I'm in complete joy, when I am, you know, like met my grandson for the first time, and I had the joy feelings, the same parts of my body activated. I got the tingling behind my eyes. I wanted to cry. My throat began to squeeze, and my chest began to ache. And I learned that in my physical body, great joy has the same physiology as great sadness. And I learned a huge lesson about blocking the sadness from my past, because I was actually blocking my ability to be loved. The next step to that, that was profound enough, hugely profound for me. But the next step was with my mom, because I always thought that I had to feel a certain way from my mom. That if I didn't feel a certain way, that I was, what would you say, like I was missing something in life, that my life couldn't be complete because what I felt like I needed from my mom. Well, what I realized is the physiological feeling of being loved. That expansion in my chest, that quiet joy, that relaxation that came from being really loved could happen if I was petting a dog. It could happen if I was hugged the lady at Walgreens. It could happen when I worked with my clients. And I realized that physiologically being fully accepted by someone is equal. It doesn't have to come from a specific person. That totally changed my life, because then I began to see the world like this big sea of love, and that there's people everywhere that wanted to connect with me and show me acceptance and love. And my mom and my relationship has actually taken steps towards the better. I still feel that division between us, because, you know, it's like I said, sometimes I feel like I was born in the wrong nest, you know.
Right.
We just don't get each other. But I learned I don't need to be gotten by her to be okay. And so I think that those growing up years are absolutely critical. If you're a person who has trouble being connected and feeling loved, going back and doing a little inquiry into those growing up years could really have an impact.
So do you feel like that there's some sort of patterns that we somehow, it's sort of like a DNA deal that, you know, we inherit from our growing up years to adulthood, but it's not permanent. It can be fixed. It can be refined, so to speak.
Right. This is the way I look at it. And many of my perceptions on how love works, I mean, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I am a very, very good teacher and coach. And what I do is just kind of, I've been trained in several different techniques, but when I talk to people and engage with people, I have a way of being able to explain what it is that I think is going on. So this is what I believe happens. I believe that when you're born, babies are just so darn adorable, and everybody wants to pinch their cheek and go, oh, look, look, how beautiful this baby is. And love just pours to a baby. I mean, you just love pours to a baby. They're supposed to be a love sponge. Unfortunately, these darling love sponges are put into homes where people have no clue how to take care of a love sponge. We have no clue. And no matter how well-meaning our parents are, they don't know. Because we don't, there's no instruction manual. So here we have this little being that's supposed to be a love sponge, but has no guard, has no protection for itself. And so when the family life becomes loud and gregarious, and sometimes there's fighting, sometimes there might be alcohol involved, that an energetic cocoon begins to wrap itself around the being so that it's not overstimulated and not frightened to death by what's going on. And so the love that was vibrating out and attracting more and more love begins to be muffled because the cocoon is there to protect it.
Sure.
So then the next step, I think, is the ages between 13 and 23, which are critical. We are stepping out from our families. We're trying to act like we're our own person. We end up compromising a lot of our values because we really want to fit with our peers. Some of us have early success like you did, where you're put into a world that's way beyond what your knowing is. And what happens is this energetic cocoon, because our inner being knows that we could be bruised so easily, so we get wrapped again with layers of this energetic cocoon. So by the time we're trying to attract love in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, it's like our authentic love vibe is completely muffled. And we either attract no one, or we attract people that are close but not quite. You know, people come in that you kind of like, but after a couple dates, there's no attraction anymore. So the idea is not so much like we're born like flawed and not able to receive love. It's just that that energetic cocoon prohibits us from radiating our true, authentic lovableness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And Lord, again, when I speak about this, I'm speaking on behalf of, you know, myself, knowing what I went through and am going through in a way, because I was lopsided. You know, it's like you're working all this time on your right hand or on your left hand and leaving the other side off. And so what happens is that you are actually wobbling out there because you have a one set of very strong self. Assured or whatever you want to call it, and then on the other side you're feeling afraid and naive. I think the word for me was more of being naive and thinking that, you know, like, wow, this is it or that, and then when you get in a situation where you get hurt, then you rightfully so, as you had mentioned, you run into your own cocoon.
It feels good in there. It feels good in there, and that's where, you know, because you can control your environment.
Definitely.
But the thing is, though, that, you know, cocoons are temporary. And so what happens, like, later in life, if you don't, you know, allow yourself to come out of the cocoon, that's when a lot of self-destructive behaviors happen to just bust you out.
One way
or the other.
Well, I've been fortunate in the sense that you mentioned something about your relationship with your daughter. There's certain things that you don't want to know, and I can certainly understand that. And from the daughter's perspective and me being a son, I've been fortunate that I have over the years, you know, 9 different women whom are, you know, my moms that I could talk to. I can talk to mom number one. about things that I don't want to talk to mom number two about.
Right. Love that. I love that, and I'm grateful for the women that are in my daughter's life.
Uh-huh,
she's had mentors all the way through, too, and I remember back when she was a teenager, I was so grateful because this one particular woman just really befriended my daughter, and I knew for a fact. You know what's interesting, Johnny, is that some of the women that I deal with, they're jealous of those other women.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, no. be grateful for those women because our children can't come, nor should they come to us with everything. They need to individuate, and they need to be their own people. And it does take a village to create a community of support around you so you can go forward in life.
Well, when you approach things from an unconditional love perspective and from a motherly love, and of course I'm injecting this in here, one of the things that this is very interesting because my Italian foster mom mentioned, you know, she said, you know, for all the kids that have helped that are not my own kids, the moms are always jealous or feel, you know, angry at me and stuff like that. And you said, you know, your mom and my mom, this is my adopted mom in Malaysia, you know, she said, you know, your mom has been very thankful, you know, that I'm involved in your life. And I said, yeah, because she would do the same thing if your son were in Malaysia, because she realized that, you know, that's what her role is, in the sense that, you know, that's just outright caring as being as an individual, you know, caring for someone, being, you know, from an unconditional love perspective. And so, and my mom actually has been very thankful for all these wonderful women that were in my life, because that helped me where she could not have been there.
Yep.
Someone else sort of pick up the slack, so to speak.
And it's a relief for us moms.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it has taught me, you know, over the years, and things that I actually take things for granted simply because of my youth. But in the course of writing my book, you know, it was a humbling experience realizing, like, oh, wow, this is what true love is, and then trying to apply that to my personal life in dealing with people, because it's very difficult for me to... there is a shield, in a sense, because it's very difficult for me to be vulnerable again, trust, thinking about, you know, whether is this person, I know this much. I know, you know, like motherly love, for example, unconditional love. I know my mom would die for me. I know my mom would do anything for me. And so you're looking at, you know, do you find that special person that feels that way about you, or is it not? And maybe that's something, you know, too much to measure. I don't know.
Well, I think that that's one of the big things that I find with my clients. I just love, you know, we're having those conversations before we actually create an agreement between us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask them, well, what does it look like? I mean, if when you're married or when you're with someone who really, really loves you, what will you have in your life that you don't have right now?
Mm-hmm.
And almost always, I would say 9 times out of 10, the phone goes completely quiet because they don't know. They've spent so much time thinking about what's not working and the fact that they're alone. They haven't gone forward, and that's one of the areas that I love to teach when we're working together, is how to use the imagination to create what it is you want. The law of attraction, if I can jump over to that, to tie it together, the law of attraction to me is just like gravity. In fact, I was laying in bed this morning thinking about this interview, thinking, you know, magnetism is fascinating, fun to play with. I mean, you know, we all loved it as kids, and the fact that you can rub a balloon on your arm and make it stick to the wall. Remember when you were a kid doing that sort of thing? We're creating static electricity, which was a magnet. And we are magnets on this planet. Gravity is a magnetic force. We are attached to the planet because of gravity, and gravity is not optional, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
If every morning you had to think, I wonder if gravity will work today, it would be a very scary world to live in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with the law of attraction, we are magnetic in our thinking. That's where it starts first. Because if you think of a thought, for example, if I ask you to think of an apple right now, and you just open your mind to an apple, it doesn't take long before you think of apple pie, apple turnover, you know, apple tree, apple seed. And our thoughts tend to gather thoughts to themselves immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so in our relationships, it's the same way, that if we are radiating self-confidence and love, we're going to attract that in the other people that we are relating to. So if we have a part of ourself that is fearful, running under the radar, that if we open our heart to someone, pain is going to happen, there's a sentry, more or less, around our heart that will just close itself and not allow you to walk forward to what could be a great relationship. Mainly because this is my feeling from talking to so many people, is that those hurts that we have, those first love hurts, you know, from that time when we're in a teenager or early 20s, when we really give our heart away the first time, we have no tools on how to deal with that kind of disappointment. No tools. So we put it away, like pack it in a suitcase, put it back in our closet of our mind somewhere, and we assume we can be fine anyway,
right,
which seems to work. However, every time you take steps to get close to someone, that suitcase comes forward and won't allow. It's like an obstacle, for example. You just can't climb around it.
Right.
And so in order to, that's the big challenge. How can you recognize that what's your personal responsibility if your relationships aren't working out or you can't find people? Many people say there's just no good people out there. You know, it's not me. I'm a nice person.
Right.
What's wrong with those people? They don't like me. So that really ends up with people getting stuck.
Right. Well, you know, you are a certified emotional freedom technique practitioner, too,
yes.
I presume. Tell us a little bit about that. What is that all about and how
effective I love EFT. It is my favorite of my tools. I have a toolbox of lots of things that plug in, and plus new techniques kind of come through. That's what's really fun about getting into your life call, you know, when you're doing what you really love to do. Ideas just generate themselves, which is fantastic. But EFT was founded by Gary Craig, and it uses acupressure points from around the body to facilitate the release of some of these emotional energy blockages. And by that I mean very real, when you're able to feel in your body some sort of pressure, pain, or tingling when you think of a past sad event. I mean, if you right now, Johnny, if you can be my stand-in for all the people that are listening, and allow yourself to think back to the last time that you had an embarrassment or a disappointment around work, or just doesn't have to be a deep and dark one. But if you go to a place where you had a disappointment or somebody made you mad, and you remember that memory, and then pay attention to your body. Do you have like a squeeze in your belly? Do you have a feel of squeezing around your throat? These are very real energy blockages that your body is showing you. So EFT uses tapping or pressure on these acupressure points while you are actually talking through some of the past events. And so my position as a practitioner is just to guide those conversations and that tapping. For me personally, it has changed my life so dramatically. The best way to express it is just to tell you what drew me in. My husband is bald, bless his heart, and I didn't know that for the whole first year that we knew each other. He wore a baseball cap, and we were golf friends. And I went through a lot of coaching after my divorce, and I learned how to tap. I learned a lot of energetic techniques, and that made it possible for me to be with my husband, because there is a bald man in my past who was very cruel. And he was a very wounded person himself. And I know his intention was never to hurt me as much as I got hurt in the situation. And some people would call it abusive, what I went through. But I used to have panic attacks with bald men. And so for me to allow myself to become intimate, fall in love with, and marry a bald man is beyond spectacular. And without EFT and the other energy techniques, I would have missed the love of my life.
I see. Very, very interesting.
So, yeah, powerful stuff, powerful stuff. But my way, the way I explain it to kids when I teach it, is it's like these little points on your body are like pressure release valves.
Sure.
That as you tap, as you are allowing yourself to go through these past events, you're actually, it's almost, if you could see it, it would be like steam escaping from your body.
Well, are there stages that someone goes through in order to prepare themselves to be successful in finding a soulmate?
Yep, I have I have three stages that I notice. Stage one, for just being successful in finding a soulmate. Stage mm-hmm. one is that you're attracting the opposite of what you want. Now, this is the stage most people find me at. They're either totally not dating for years, or they keep, one lady the other day has had 10 breakups. She's mm-hmm. 40 and never married, and she has 10 breakups that have been significant. So mm-hmm. she's totally attracting the opposite, and yet when you listen to her voice on the phone, she seems to want, really, in her own mind, she's sure that she wants to have a soulmate forever. But when the opportunity comes to actually jump into it, there's a huge guard inside that will not allow her mm-hmm. to go forward. So that's what I call, it's a very stuck stage and very frustrating. Mm-hmm. Stage two is that when you are attracting good potential, but it doesn't last, you're feeling more positive, you're getting hits on Match.com, you may be, for example, getting hits on the online dating and the guy lives across the country, but he's right. a really nice guy, and you know, there's a lot of connections. So you're beginning to attract some better situations to your life. You might be treated fairly well on the job. You might have a degree of financial success coming in. Your career is probably doing better than average.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting to attract more good fortune into your life. And then stage three, you really recognize your power. You know that you're a magnet, and you mm-hmm. start to consciously attract the highest and best in others. And so at this point, as far as the soulmate attraction goes, when you are really consciously aware that you can attract the highest and best in your friends, coworkers, and family, you are absolutely ready to attract someone into your life to entertain a soulmate potential.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the partners that come in at stage three are still temporary. A lot
right.
of people don't like to hear that, Johnny, because they
mm-hmm.
think they want the one.
But
right. each person you attract when you are in that stage three walks in with fabulous lessons. They may be your permanent person, but the relationship will be richly satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even for a moment, and you're right, because for a short period, but you find that, you are, I guess, for lack of a better term here, at your best.
Right. Because people do, the way I understand the law of attraction is that like is attracted to like, so and what you focus on expands. These are my themes.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you focus on, this explains, if I could just segue to this, but this explains mm-hmm. why a lot of times relationships don't last, because in the beginning you're on your best behavior, all you see is their adorable
right.
self. That's all you see, and it's just exciting, and then after a while, their idiosyncrasies and habits, now you're focused on those. Oh, I hate
right.
how
right.
he doesn't, he here's the laundry basket right here,
mm-hmm.
and there's his stack of dirty clothes right there. What is not computing here? And
right.
when you first were dating, you could care less about the socks. So what, for people that are already in relationship, a lot of the coaching involves helping them to get back to focusing on their partner's positive, because that changes the dynamics just tremendously.
Well, how do you apply these, I guess, techniques in some ways, identification of oneself, to change your point of attraction? How do you do that?
Well, what happens is what I do is, A, you have to know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know what you want. So
mm-hmm.
that's the big thing we talked about earlier about desire and how people are so hurt that they're afraid to want. I don't want to want that because the disappointment of not getting it's going to do me in.
Right.
That is needs to be addressed. So when a client comes forward, the very first thing we do is we figure out what they want, and that together we talk about that. We create something that feels good to them. One lady who had not dated in 10 years, I said to her, "What would you like at the end of 6 months?" She goes, "I want to be engaged." So we had a little talk about.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
Is
I mean,
that
not
reasonable?
That it doesn't. Not that it would not happen. I'm
right.
just saying that it's a pretty ambitious goal.
Exactly. So
yeah.
by the end of the conversation, what we came up with is, wouldn't it be nice if at the end of 6 months, I was comfortable dating?
Mm-hmm.
She felt delicious about that. That was so mm-hmm. doable for her. And so we worked at creating confidence for dating. And she achieved that because she before had such an unreasonable goal, she couldn't attract that in a million years. And
right.
the best way I can tell you, I'm going to tell you a little story about my client, Elise. She's one of my platinum clients, and her story is remarkable. We mm-hmm. did that first conversation about what she wanted, and then she had been widowed two times. So she had gone through real heartbreak. God knows, I have not been through that. But after we picked what she wanted, we created this little coaching program, and basically what for her, it was what I call a virtual VIP retreat. So we actually did a half day together. She lives on the East Coast, I live on the West Coast. It was done virtually. The next day, Johnny, she calls me. She's like, oh, I have to tell you what happened. You won't believe it. I said, sure, tell me. She had three invitations. It was Halloween. Granted, but she did not have a social life in her city. She had three invitations for parties. She had a phone call from a boyfriend from 9 years ago who had not talked to her in all that time, and they had a fabulous hour and a half conversation on the phone. And the man she had a crush on called her and asked her out, all on one day. Changing her attraction. Since then, she has had, she won an all-expense-paid-free trip. She writes me about once a week with what has shown up. Now, the man that she has a crush on, they are walking forward slowly toward relationship. We don't know where that's going to go. But one of the most beautiful things she told me was when Christmas came this year, she hadn't had a Christmas tree set up in years. She sat beneath her decorated Christmas tree, content. She wasn't sad. She wasn't lonely or grieving Christmas alone. For the first time in years, because her attraction has changed. She's attracting not, quote-unquote, the one, but so much good fortune has come to her. She's beginning to really vibrate in confidence, and more good things are coming. So that's how this stuff can work.
So the energy she's sending out in all actuality, the vibrations and everything else, it's just, it's not a new her, but it's something that what she focused on to emphasize, that wonderful, beautiful person that she is versus the downer side. Because in each and every one of us, you know, we do have, I think that's the real part of the balancing act. I mean, we do have our pluses and we do have our minuses or moods or whatever you want to call it. It's what we are radiating out there that will attract what comes in.
Because she's her saying, that's the magic of it, is that you are, because of your fears and doubts and lack of trust, are erased. Now, energy is never destroyed, so that these pockets within you, to me it's like you're holding beach balls underwater. You know, you've got these parts of yourself that you don't understand. Many times these floods of emotion can take you by surprise. You'll all of a sudden get really sad or really angry. It's like, oh, my gosh, where did that come from? That's usually a sign that there's something unresolved there that we just didn't know how to solve in the past. So these techniques bring this, what I like to say is it takes these trapped pieces of energy and transforms them and puts them into the positive bank account. So now
Do you have special trigger words that you use to change someone's you know, luck and love from a standpoint of, you know, like someone who really can't seem to find love out there?
There's three words that I adore. I love mottos and jingles and that sort of stuff. The one I've talked about before is what you focus on expands. And everybody can just address themselves and think, wait a minute, if something's coming that I don't like, what am I focusing on? That's a great tip. But my favorite words are up until now. Up until now are the most powerful words you can use. If you've got a pencil, write this down. Because when you, let's say you're a person who hasn't had a date in 10 years. If you simply add, up until now, I haven't been that comfortable dating. What that communicates to the divine and to the world where attraction lives is something new is coming.
Right.
This is a fabulous way to allow different things to come into your life. So you say, for example, I haven't had a boyfriend in 4.5 years. I just don't feel comfortable. There's no good guys out there. You know, you hear yourself start going, say, up until now, I haven't met anybody interesting. Can you feel a difference in that, Johnny?
Sure.
Yeah. That difference is an energetic shift that will absolutely start a change. My clients who find me, all over the world. I'm talking to a woman in South Africa right now about setting up a joint venture to work, reach the world together for love. But my life and my career has so changed as I've gotten more and more targeted on who it is that I want to help. So
right.
attraction, even though I have my soulmate, and I love Lair, I mean, we are just having a ball, 4.5 years, still
mm-hmm.
consider myself a newlywed. So
mm-hmm.
I am using my very same techniques that I used to attract him
mm-hmm.
to attract clients.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very same thing. It's picking exactly what I want. It's projecting to the world the love that I have to share and knowing that I can help certain people. I'm not trying to help everyone
mm-hmm.
because I can't. There's too many people
right.
in the world.
Right.
But I have a deep confidence that when people come across my path, and whether it's through your radio program or internet stuff, and all of a sudden they find me and they'll say, I don't even know how I found you. If you put life coach into Google,
mm-hmm.
millions of hits. So
right,
that even
right.
now, if there's somebody listening to us right now on the call and they've heard something in this call has touched their heart,
mm-hmm.
and they may be thinking, how in the world did this woman in San Diego and this man in Texas, how did this all come about? That's attraction-based reality, and that's what can
mm-hmm.
happen for you. So when I give a tip like this, you can walk away from this call simply using what we have talked about,
sure.
and your vibration will be in a different place.
And what's the second one?
The second one for a technique?
The trigger words, yeah. Oh, is
oh
this
trigger
the,
words?
This is the three words that you were talking about up until now.
Fantastic. Write that down.
Okay. Yes.
Yep, and put it,
yes,
if you want, just put on a post-it note and put it in your bathroom, because most of the time when people are stuck, they're usually talking about their problem over and over again. Another tip
right.
is fantastic. If you find yourself talking the same story to like
mm-hmm.
three people, you know how people are, they'll just, well,
right,
then she
right.
did this, and then you, if you've told the same story and you hear yourself telling it again, stop.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. Because chances are that you are creating more of the same drama simply
right.
by saying it over and over again.
Right. So, I mean, this is something, a tidbit for all the golfers. You know, up until now, I've not shot an eagle yet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It is, because it opens your own mind to the fact that there's a different reality than the one you've been living. You know,
right.
how boring would it be if every time we went to our favorite restaurant, there was only one entree?
Well, you see, what's interesting, too, I think the phrase up until now, because it, and you mentioned, it's a mental paradigm shift. So when you do that, it's sort of a release, and
mm-hmm.
you I guess invoke in some ways here, I'm no guru at this, the law of change, in terms of, you mentioned the law of attraction, because it attracts something different.
Yep, that's exactly right. It really is cool, and I have to say, resource wise,
mm-hmm.
I have been deeply impacted by the work of Abraham Hicks.
Mm.
All of their books are wonderful, several, and they're very, very practical. And then in the soulmate realm, Ariel Ford has a book called The Soulmate Secret, and that's another one. It's a very small book, but it's just filled with fabulous suggestions. I mean, there's so many resources available, and if people can start walking forward and research about soulmates instead of just sitting at home alone every weekend feeling
mm-hmm.
sorry for themselves, I'm sorry that seems harsh. I don't mean to be harsh.
Yeah,
but the
yeah.
fact is, though, that now, although, I always tell my clients, you've got to get out, because it's not going to come walking to your door. Of course,
yeah.
I do have a client that the UPS guy was very cute, and they ended up dating, and I have to laugh about that. But for most people, that's not going to happen.
No,
and so
you didn't teach her this, Ben and Flip or something, and what do you call it, Legally Blonde, that.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, right. You never know, but it is, it always starts, there's a change in mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I once heard a quote that said, we always create things twice,
mm-hmm.
once in our minds and once in our world. I mean, when you wanted to start your radio show, it
mm-hmm.
was an idea first, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm.
And it formulated and became a plan, and then you made it happen. And in the very same way, it's that with soulmates. You know, people hesitate about coaching. It's like, what's coaching, and why would I want
right.
to have coaching?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look at a professional sports person. There's not a professional sports person. You know, Roger Federer just won
mm-hmm.
the Australian
mm-hmm.
Open.
Mm-hmm.
He would never do that without a coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. there's no sports person that doesn't have a coach or mentor, and many of them have many. Why? Because
right.
they need someone to ask them the questions they won't ask themselves. They
right.
need someone to have another set of eyes,
mm-hmm.
another set of ears, to see themselves in their full potential. I look at coaching as you
mm-hmm.
don't teach someone how to love someone.
Right.
That's a natural skill. Have you ever seen an 18-month-old with its arms wrapped around its mommy's neck?
Right. That's
you don't
natural.
Teach that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what a good coach does is it puts you in touch with what's your natural gifting.
It's already in there, in all actuality.
It's already in
right.
there, absolutely.
Right.
So coaching is like a professional cheerleader in many ways, walking you through a better version of yourself. Whereas
right.
therapy, which I've had plenty of also, therapy is different. Therapy is very important for some people. And if
yeah.
issues are too deep, sometimes people have experienced such heartbreak that it's outside of a coaching parameter. And
yeah.
many times I will refer people to therapy. Sometimes I see myself as a bridge to therapy where people start to trust that they need more help and then know how to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Johnny, an interesting thing about coaching on the phone is that I find people often have remarkable results because there's nobody there. They're
right.
in their living room by themselves. And if they're processing
things,
they
tend to be a little bit more open because,
yeah.
You know, there's no one-on-one, I guess, embarrassment in the way because you're not seeing that person's eye, so to speak, I guess, in some
yes.
ways, you know. So,
oh, yes.
So that's very, very interesting. Well, how can someone get in touch with you to hire you as a coach?
Well, thank you for asking that. I do have a special page set up for your listeners today. If they go to attractyoursoulmatenow.com/Johnny, there is a free 5-day coaching program, 6 minutes a day. They're little mini recordings where you can just hop on, take a listen
mm-hmm.
to what my coaching is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of that coaching program, there's an opportunity to contact me if they'd like to have a personal consultation. I do work with people, at least right now. I don't know how long this will go,
mm-hmm.
but for right now, I am available for about a half hour of a consultation on the phone just to see if it's a good fit. And
mm-hmm.
so the first step is to go ahead and take that little coaching program and see if it's if it feels good to you. One of the things that I love to encourage people is, you know, if something fascinates you about a coach, whether it's me or anyone, if that something lights up and you're like, you're leaning forward and think, I want to know something, go to that site, take a look around, look and see if it feels good. If something in your heart leaps, that's a sign from a part of you that you're ready for progress.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean it's not going to be scary? Of course not. Does it mean you're going to have to invest something? Yes. You're going to have to invest your time, and you're going to have to be ready to invest your money. And that's scary for lots and lots of people. But
sure.
if you can feel that spark inside of hope that maybe there is someone still out there for you, whoever you listen to, go
mm-hmm.
to their book, go to their website, and see if it feels like a good fit for you. So attractyoursoulmatenow.com is where you can find out more about me, and there's lots of free resources over there.
Fantastic. And real quickly, what can we expect from you in 2010? Anything special?
Well, yes. I'm formulating my new program, which is Stop Searching and Be Found. It's how to be irresistible to true love. And the programming itself, I'm going to be having several modules. There'll be 5-week teleseminar
mm-hmm.
series where I'm going to take that topic and I'm going to break it down and go step by step so people can join me in teleseminar format and we'll work together to be irresistible to true love.
Fantastic. And we're coming to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living for us?
Yes, my recipe for living is really about personal responsibility. I remember even years ago, and my mom could be listening, bless you, Mom, you know, I know you and I have this interesting relationship, but years and years ago, it has to be 25 years ago right now,
mm-hmm.
I was so troubled by the lack of closeness with my mom, and it seemed like everything I did made her mad. You know, it seemed like
mm-hmm.
everything I
mm-hmm.
did caused her to be sharp. And I remember thinking to myself, thank God she acts the way she does, because if she didn't, I wouldn't find this part of me that needs repair. So my recipe for living is when something bothers you or something troubles you on the inside, I ask myself, what is it in me that's creating that connection? What is it in me that's wanting to be free or released? Because my body would not be upset. I would not be so upset if there wasn't a part of my heart that isn't being seen, that's mm-hmm. ready to come into the light.
Very interesting. That's a wonderful recipe for living. Catherine, thank you for that and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Please join, to all our listeners, please thank you for joining us this morning. And please join me next Tuesday morning when we continue with our February's theme, Love Will Find a Way. My guest will be Ruth Milstein, the award-winning author of Cooking with Love. Ruth was born in Israel and graduated from Tel Aviv University. After earning her master's degree in art and journalism, she went on to study jewelry design in Israel and in the United States. Although she has a career in designing jewelry, her real passion was indeed in food and cooking. Combining her original family recipes and extensive experience traveling throughout Europe and United States, she recently wrote a book titled Cooking with Love, which recently won the 2009 Gourmet World Cookbook Award in Israel. Since Valentine's is just around the corner, Ruth and I will be discussing food, romance, and cooking with love in your kitchen. So please join us next Tuesday, and we will see what we can cook up with. And thank you all for listening. Have a great week. And Catherine, thank you again. Have a great day.
Thanks, Johnny.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.